Look, Bumble knows you're exhausted by dating. All the, must not take yourself too seriously, and 6-1 since that matters, and what do I even say other than, hey? Well, that's why they're introducing an all-new Bumble, with exciting features to make compatibility easier, starting the chat better, and dating safer. They've changed, so you don't have to. Download the new Bumble now.
Families have a lot going on. Let Ollie help manage the mental load with new cognitive health supplements for everyone 4 and up, like delicious Ollie Focus Pops or Ollie Mellow Pops for kids. And for parents, try 3 new Brainy Chews to help you focus, chill out, or get energized. Find these cognitive health buddies for the whole fam at Ollie.com. That's OLLY.com. These statements have not been evaluated by the Food and Drug Administration. This product is not intended to diagnose, treat, cure, or prevent any disease.
Hey, this is Dr. Drew, and you are listening to This Life
with Bob Foy
and Dr. Drew.
Here we are.
Hey, everybody. Welcome to another episode of This Life.
Check, check, check. 1, 2. We're back.
Aren't you going to do any
from Hong Kong? Again. Well, I want to hear about Hong Kong.
Oh, we'll tell you all about it. No weird beginning. No.
Ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, gather around the computer. Okay. It's an old-time radio hour.
You're not offended I called a weird beginning?
I just really want to know about Hong Kong.
In just a minute, we'll be welcoming Owen Elliott Kugel. She's, of course, Mama Cass's daughter. She's a friend of yours and mine. And she was on Susan, the First Lady of Love's podcast, where she had a reading, and Mama Cass came through in a very vivid and wild way. What's that, Susan?
Calling Out with Susan
Pinsky, of course, is that podcast. Mm-hmm. But before we do introduce her, I want to remind people that This Life is courtesy of Bergamot Mega Plus and Aloe Recovery, aloerecovery.com.
That's the place I found it out in Malibu. You got to go where the people want to go.
Step back from the mic a little bit. Okay. There you go. You need to put headphones on, dude. Okay.
Yeah,
because
I mean,
there's there.
Okay, so
there we go. Yes,
Aloe Recovery Centers used to be called Acadia when we started it about 3 years ago. It's basically the Briar Unit, which is
we used to work,
where just highly skilled professionals, people that I hired, that I kind of indoctrinated into a way of thinking about addiction the way that you taught me.
Yeah,
which is, you know, don't listen so much what they're saying; it's behind what they're saying.
Yeah,
right. And
yeah.
The idea that. There's,
in other words, your patients are lying to you. It's
yes,
okay.
All the time, it's and okay. It's okay to lie.
It's okay. It's part of their condition. It's all right.
And
your job is to figure out and feel your way through what's really going on for them.
Very intuitive, and so it's a great place. I'm out there on Tuesdays. Every Tuesday, I do groups at all the levels of care.
Good.
And it's fun. And the idea was to bring real treatment to Malibu, and then what happened was we just killed it. Because that's real treatment.
Guess what? It works. Guess what? Shocking. And by the
builds community, builds aftercare, builds, how about this? 70% of the referrals come from former clients.
Perfect. Not only that, as usual, it's the lowest priced thing. You know, it's
affordable.
Because the people are just trying to make money are out there charging a fortune and not really, it's not about real
recovery. But that started happening when we started it. It all started going to insurance. At first, the big ones were saying, oh, you need to pay us $36,000 and we're going to run your insurance.
Jesus.
And we were saying, no, you don't need to pay us nothing. Just bring your insurance card. And then the playing field got equaled out by Obamacare. Now everybody takes insurance.
All right. Fair enough. All right. Let's welcome our guest, Owen Elliott Kugel. Owen, welcome as always.
Thank you. Hi.
Hey.
Now, one of the reasons we invited you in here, aside from the fact that you had a very vivid experience at Calling Out with Susan Pinsky, was that you, not only a friend of mine, but turns out you have a connection with Bob.
Well, my mother, Nancy, who's still alive, but she's not doing well.
We got
right
a lot
now.
To talk about there.
Yeah, we're going to talk about that later. But she lived with your mom in that Stanley Hills Road or whatever the Laurel Canyon house was in probably 67.
Again, people that didn't quite hear my little intro, her mom is Mama Cass.
Yeah.
From Mamas and the Papas. And your mom, what was
your mom just basically opened her doors to anybody who needed a place
to live.
Right? Well, my mom was one of them. I was born when she was 15. She ran away from home. She ran to Hollywood. Mm. I lived with my grandparents, who I thought were my parents. And once in a while,
Jack Nicholson syndrome.
Yeah, same thing.
Mm-hmm. Well, what's that?
Jack Nicholson syndrome.
The same thing. John Lennon had the same thing.
Yeah. Really?
Yeah, you didn't know that? I thought we talked about that.
Not quite so vividly. I did not know that.
Not that I have anything in common with those two people. But my mom talked so fondly about your mom and how she looked out for
her. How did they meet?
Probably just on Sunset Strip.
So your mom was ran away to the
Hollywood. Yeah, she was 16 or 17 probably at this point. And that's where my mom met Manson. We were talking with Deborah Tate a couple weeks ago.
Mm-hmm.
And my mom met Manson at that era, at that time, was friends with Terry Melcher and said, this guy is evil. And everyone else was infatuated with him, I guess, or infatuated with the girls that were following him. So what did I do? Raised my kid in Laurel Canyon, too. Were you raised in Laurel Canyon? You go to Wonderland?
I didn't go to Wonderland. I was raised in Laurel Canyon until I was 7.
Okay.
When she died. And then I was raised in Nichols Canyon, so it really wasn't that
far. Oh, just
far.
One canyon over.
That's right.
Hold on.
Where did you go to school? To the Michael Jackson school?
Your mom's coming through again. Some weird music coming off of a... Get that clock out of here.
No, it keeps talking.
And makes apparently quite a bit of noise.
Nichols Canyon.
At 3 o'clock.
Right.
Did you go to the Michael Jackson Elementary School down the hill from Nichols?
I didn't. I actually went to Oakwood.
Where is that?
It's a private school in the valley.
Oh, my goodness. Was that good for you? Because I get worried about private schools. I think that's where all the cocaine is.
You know, I mean, actually, to tell you the truth, I went to mostly Jewish preschool and elementary school, and then around the time that my mom died, she was about to put me into Oakwood. My mom died over a summertime.
How old were you? Okay.
I was 7. So I was supposed to go to second grade at Oakwood, but when she died, there was no money, which is another conversation entirely.
Talk with John Phillips about.
Exactly.
Look at Drew. Just look at the look on your face.
I just don't know. These are all details.
There's
I don't know.
There's so much corruption in the music business. It's disgusting.
Well, she didn't write anything, so there was nothing for her for anyone to steal from her except for her own flagrant spending habits.
Was she a spender?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. She loved nice things. Who doesn't, you know?
What?
A spender and houser of strangers.
Huh.
Sounds very codependent.
Incredibly. Yeah, totally. Anyway, I didn't go to private school then. I spent a couple of years in public school, and then when things changed financially for my aunt and uncle who came to raise me, I then went into private school, and that was 5th grade.
Oh, really?
So from 5th grade on.
Do you think private school is better for kids? Because I have a 6-year-old, and I'm trying to figure it out.
It depends where the
school
is.
He went to the most elite private preschool, and you just feel like all the Ranger pulling up and just the bubble that they live in, you want them to live in more balanced.
It's,
but why
especially
is there this
LA,
big divide between the what is being called by Trump the elitist world and the real world, the middle class world, the working class
because
world?
Because there is no middle class anymore, right?
I think it begins in education. If you're going, if all the elite kids are going to this special school,
right?
And all the working listen, I went to Catholic school. Everybody
well,
was
here's
there.
The thing:
poor people,
I'm,
rich
I would,
people.
I would consider myself to be working class because I have to be honest. I can't afford the tuition where my son goes to school, and I'm fortunate enough to, he's been going to a Jewish school, which allows for a lot more funding, and they've been very kind to us and made it affordable for us to continue to educate him there.
Mm-hmm.
But without that, I mean, you know, private school tuition for elementary school, what is it? You know, $40,000
a year? Between $30,000 and $40,000.
It is insane how bad
it's
our
exorbitant.
Educational system is
exorbitant.
In this part of the country anyway.
So don't you think
in
that's
Los Angeles.
Yeah. I went to Catholic school in Inglewood. My family is pretty all right
Catholic
financially.
School is subsidized by the Catholic Church, by the way.
But yeah, but there was working kids from
lots.
That we all played basketball together. We all knew each other. Mm-hmm. We all went to each other's house and played. We rode bikes together. It didn't matter. Did people like coming to our house because we had a pool? Yes, but that was there was a way of teaching that we all have value. And when you just take everyone and just have them in the special school and the special world, it separates for life those generation of kids.
But now the problem is we have all these kids that are especially raised in highly tuned machines that can't get a job either, which is another sort of layer to this.
Right.
But by the way, where the F did you grow up? Did you grow up in Inglewood? Did you grow up in the Inland Empire?
I grew up everywhere in Palm Springs, Inglewood, Culver City. Palm Springs, Inglewood, and Culver City.
I can't keep track of it.
Well, my dad was going down economically. So
apparently.
And by the way, let me give a little plug for Owen's. It's a podcast, right?
It's actually a radio show.
There's
actually gotten real radio stations this summer. The Ripped Radio Network Monday night is now going to go to a couple of real markets.
Okay.
One of them being Chicago on a soul station. I have no idea how we're going to fit in, but we'll see. But yeah, that's kind of a new fun thing.
And it's called The Rob Saul Show.
The Rob Saul Show.
It's with Owen Elliott and Doug Nelson.
And Rob Saul, as it were.
And Rob Saul, I imagine. Every Monday, it's available at 10 p.m., 7 Pacific. You can also get it at listen.robsaul.com. Also available on iTunes. And tell me about this PBS Pledge Drive.
Well, it's the fifth. This is going to make everyone in this room feel as old as it makes me feel, which is it's the 50th anniversary of the Mamas and Papas and California.
Crazy. I can get
Monday,
with that.
Monday and all of that. And it's a... It's kind of a big deal, 50 years, you know, and PBS is doing a pledge drive and a program that they're going to start at the end of August, and there's some DVDs that are going to be given away in that. One of them is a documentary about the group, and another one is the collection of their Ed Sullivan performances, which are really cool. And the third one, which is a little close to my heart, is my mom's two television specials that she made.
Oh, my God.
One from 1968 and one from 1973. The 73 one has not been seen since 1973, since
wow,
it aired awesome. On CBS in 1973.
The 68 one had a bunch of fantastic guests. Who was on it? Just I've seen it before. It's amazing.
Joni Mitchell.
Yeah.
That's just one. And it's probably one of her first appearances, if not the first television appearance that she made. There's a duet of my mom, Joni, and Mary Travers singing I Shall Be Released, which is ridiculous. The most beautiful harmony ever. But yeah, so those two specials will be on the PBS drive. So.
We opened this with you saying there's so much corruption in the music industry. What are you talking about?
Well, just the basic rules of the music business are this. Cass Elliott was a singer. She didn't write songs.
Right.
Her voice and her image is embedded in people's minds.
Yes.
You don't get compensated for that.
No.
Right? It's called mechanical royalties, 25%. I'll give you an example.
If it's intellectual property, if you know how to actually work your intellectual property rights and branding and all
well,
of that.
Let's talk three-quarter rate.
Let's do that.
So in 1930-something, the record business wasn't doing so good, Drew. So they just decided they were just only going to pay three-quarters of the money that they was owed the artist. And
three-quarters.
Then they just kept it. Forever, and it's
a quarter
royalty
in reserve,
rate.
As it were,
and
you never see it. I mean, reserve for what, you know? And they do that to music publishers too. Like if you're a songwriter who's, it used to be like this. People used to make whole records. When you were a songwriter with putting a song on a record,
like Jimmy Webb would, or the great songwriters of L.A.,
the record company is going to turn around and go, "We're only going to give you three quarters of what you really should
did
get."
You watch
so
the
be grateful that you have anything.
The TV series Vinyl. Did you watch that?
I watched some of it. The Vegas thing, you know, it was kind of crazy.
Was it accurate in terms of it's? That's the fact, right? Some people took over that sort of.
Well, their
everything.
Argument is much like now sports' argument. Is there's so much it takes so many failed artists that they have to compensate by only paying $2 to the successful artist.
Right.
That's BS. That's part of their risk in business. You can't pull that business argument in any other business.
Yeah.
You know, so the CD sells for $12. The artist only gets two.
Mm.
Right, and they are paying back what it costs to make it out of the two.
Hmm.
Look at, would you sign up for that?
It's
just
today,
because most musicians are stoned and fucked up and insecure.
They don't get a difference. Well, they didn't have a choice back then, and nowadays there is a choice because you can put
yourself.
Music out.
Yeah, I think
by
it's
yourself,
a much better time
and,
now.
And to be fair, I mean, someone like your mom would be able to use her image and brand to do all kinds of things.
Right.
Yeah.
Right.
And so it's sort of not just about the music ownership now. It's in fact,
but
I
with
would
the
argue
icons of the '60s, I mean, there Jimi Hendrix's image is owned by, I believe, probably five different entities.
Huh.
You know what I mean?
You know, I've only spent the last 20 something years doing this. I mean, I could probably recite most of this in my sleep. But the truth is that the way that the estates are run is certainly subject to whomever the heirs and the, you know, trustees and whomever that may be, and it's not always an easy negotiation. There are certainly artists who like we're talking about how people are making money these days. It is about branding, is about right. commercial usage. And there's a lot of, correct me if I'm wrong, but back in the good old days when people were making records, the idea that your music was going to be used in any way, shape, or form in a to sell anything commercial was considered really a sellout. Like, you would never allow music to be used for
a commercial. That was a big thing when Light My Fire became a commercial.
I can give you an example of how the music
But nowadays, nobody's not cashing the checks.
Right.
You know, I mean, it's the only way you make your money because there are no sales at all.
No sales.
Zero. It's done. Streaming, which, you know, the rates are... You know, one tenth of a penny per. You know, I mean, it's ridiculous.
It's mostly to play live, but I'll tell you the example. So, in all my seven albums I made with Thelonious Monster, all of what I earned from that was not equal to Sammy Hagar Weekend, the song I wrote, the Chili Peppers singing it in a movie. I got money off of that than all of that music. The license.
It's all about the licensing.
And so that's why people want to be in movies and blah, blah, and all that
crazy.
Kind of thing.
It's so weird.
It's so different. It's
and
so
you
different
never know
now.
What's going on. If you're stoned and, like, you know all the musicians I know.
Yeah.
Like, we were two generations after your mom.
Yeah.
We're just so out of it. Nobody, anytime somebody would give you money, you'd go, awesome.
and you have no idea you actually had to pay it back. Oh, so, I have to give this back?
So speaking of mamas, you've had a big transition with Mama. Want to talk about that?
Yeah, she just had a stroke, a massive stroke.
And this is your, not your sister mom, this is your actual mom.
No, this is my sister
your
mom.
Your sister mom. Sister mom.
Gee, how hard is it to keep track of?
I send you a diagram every freaking time. So it's your sister mom.
So I was raised believing the woman, Nancy, who lived with your mom, was
your sister.
My sister.
Yeah.
And so I would sometimes go to Hollywood and we would go eat with her. My mom, who raised me, who I thought was my mom. My
who
mom
was your grandma?
My sister.
Who was your grandmother?
Was my grandmother, but I didn't know that.
Yeah, right.
So my mom, we would go visit my sister like in West Hollywood and go eat somewhere. And it was always like, I wanted to be around her.
Oh, interesting.
I didn't know it was my mother.
Isn't that weird?
But she was living
there was a connection.
How weird.
But she was also living that free spirit of what I inherited through her, that kind of...
So you were attracted to that whole
thing. Yeah, that thing. She was, you know, that whole... There was a certain neurotic energy about her, right? You understand?
Yeah, no, I get
it's
it.
It's a combination of alcoholism and codependency and batshit crazy.
Which is magical, by the way. It's quite the cocktail.
Let's call it artistry. Artist.
There you go.
So,
oh, my God.
So I just remember that, and I was always drawn to Hollywood. When I was 16, I was going to high school in Huntington Beach. I would just, after school, just drive up and get off on Hollywood, on Sunset Boulevard at the Hollywood Freeway, and just drive down to the ocean and then drive back.
Mm-hmm.
Looking for her? No,
just to be a part of this thing.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And
I know a lot of people just go to Sunset Strip and just walk around, right?
Yeah. But I wanted to...
Drive around there too, but I would be too afraid to get out. I would do the same thing. I would drive out to the beach. I would check it out. It's great. I'd come back. I mean, you know. Huh. But, you know, it's just to be in it.
Yeah. And
right?
What it is
now it,
full of life.
Are you talking about her
that's
now? Or are you talking
no,
about back
not
to that
talking
the
about
scene,
her. I'm talking about that energy of full of life.
That
you're
scene.
Looking for something. Seekers are looking for something. Addicts are looking for something. And when it's evocative and when it's exciting and when everybody else is paying attention to it from the outside, you want to get inside it.
That's just your reward system going, go this way.
Yeah.
You're full of life. You're full of shit.
It's full of life.
Yeah, I understand that, but it's just your reward system going.
But you can't fix your reward system.
I understand,
that's what
but
you're born
but
with.
But your brain goes, it's because it's life. It's because it's so fulfilling. Your reward system going, yeah, that's right. It's
but
philosophically,
that's so pejorative towards people that have it.
Look, I'm just being facetious.
Oh, he's just not creative. He's jealous.
Half of our society have that, I believe.
20% maybe.
It's getting bigger.
It's different. That's a different piece, I think. But I know what you mean.
I think America was based on that.
Oh, 100%.
Right?
Yes.
So where did all the seekers
the adventure
come
spirit and all that
to
stuff,
come over here to a freezing tundra with, you know, a free religion? right?
I was just thinking about the fact that your mom lived with my mom. I think that's so cool. And she
Where was that?
On Stanley Hills Drive.
That's where. Yeah, she owned that before Woodrow Wilson.
Woodrow Wilson.
She lived on Woodrow Wilson Drive.
Where was the Stanley?
When you go up Laurel Canyon.
Laurel Canyon, okay.
Yeah. When you go up Lookout Mountain Drive.
All right. For people around the country, this is sort of a famous hippie area.
More music. I wrote a song about Laurel Canyon. Yeah, I know. More music came from those three square miles.
Yeah.
Was that the A-frame house?
I guess.
I know that she lived in an A-frame house before she bought the house.
Yeah, this is in mid-60s, like 67, 66, 67, 68.
Yeah.
When were you born?
I was born in 67. And I don't. Okay. And
I was born in 61.
I think she already had the house, but I can't be sure. I remember obviously being there.
But that's where everybody lived. All these great musicians, all this great artistry came out of there. And the reason why is because you could fly right down to Sunset where all the clubs and all the drugs were.
Actually, David Crosby put it really well. He said that it was really great because if you were low on gas, you just make it to the top of the canyon and you could just throw it into neutral and coast all the way down and hit the gas station.
But there was
the
all kinds of little canyons back in there and a lot of stuff.
But that's where
Manson and those guys flourished too.
I mean, Manson was out it's outside Simi Valley.
No, but he was going there to endear himself to Terry Melcher and the Beach Boys.
He had an agenda. Yeah.
He had an agenda from the time he got out of Marion Prison. The interesting thing about Marion Prison, there's been parolees. Marion is this horrible prison that In the Belly of the Beast is written about by Jack Henry Abbott.
Yeah.
So the people that have paroled out of there are Gary Gilmore, Charles Manson, and Jack Henry Abbott, who ended up killing the guy in New York City, remember? That Norman Mailer petitioned to get him out because he wrote this great book about being in prison. So that's
horrible.
That's the indoctrination to the psychopath, right? And he comes out and he knows music is the way to girls and music is the way to get into this town.
Oh, interesting. Right? So psychopaths were really...
He knew what he was doing.
Oh, my God. All right, speaking of having an agenda, I have an agenda right now. I have to take a break. Before I take a break, I want to remind people that one of the proud sponsors here we have is Bergamot Mega Plus. It's a nutritional supplement that I am persuaded is an excellent alternative for people that are intolerant of statins. It's extremely rich in polyphenols. Italian government's been very involved in the research on this, and I've spoken to their researchers, and it was interesting when I asked them, why isn't this research getting out? And they said, there's so much noise out there, it's hard to get through. But they check it out yourself. If you don't believe me, check out the website, Bergamot Mega Plus Natural Statin. We also call that an HMG-CoA reductase inhibitor. It may lower triglycerides, raise HDL. And for you, in a nutshell, it addresses condition that is faced by millions of people worldwide, which is the metabolic syndrome, which is marked by abdominal fat, high cholesterol, high blood sugar, high triglycerides, high blood pressure. I don't know about you guys, but I got that. And it's a very common problem, and it's something people need to attend to. Typically, there are pharmaceutical treatments for this, but Bergamot Mega Plus is a nutritional, all-natural alternative. Cardiologists and physicians all over the world have been recommending it. Its effectiveness is the subject, as I said, of many scientific publications. To learn more, go to Bergamet, BERGAMET.com, Bergamet.com, or go to thislifepodcast.com or drdrew.com and click on the Bergamet banner at the website. We're taking a little break. Be right back.
And we're back.
We are back. So you've been avoidant of the mama topic here a little bit.
Yeah, she had a stroke. I don't know what to think, but I called you. You were in Hong Kong. The idea is they don't tell you what's going on, and you don't know the right questions to ask. But, like you're for Bob, like 7 days, we're like, oh, she's going to get better.
Where is she?
She's in Oklahoma.
So, Bob, it's hard for doctors to answer those questions because it's hard to speak the language of what the injury is. People don't understand. You won't get it if we start telling you, well, here are the areas of the brain affected and what that means long term and how that's going to evolve. It's really hard for people to get their head around that unless you've seen it and seen it and seen it and seen it. And then you go, okay, I know what that is. That's that. That's not going
to
go well.
But when they started telling us to find a nursing home, we kind of knew, oh, this is not good.
Right.
That's how we got the hint, like, oh, she's not going to get better here. She's not going to just pull out of it and recognize us. You know what I mean? Mm. And they do the scale, and that's why I texted you the scale. That 17.
It's not like a mini mental status scale. Mini mental status exam. I think you're talking about. So, what's her level of cognition? You know, what can she
didn't know
do?
Where she was, right, what year right. it is, who her daughter was. She right. didn't know anything.
Sounds like lower than a 17, but anyway, I don't know. There's
sounds
lots of different,
lower than a 17.
There's lots of different scales out there. I'm not sure what scale.
She gets violent anytime somebody approaches her.
It's tough.
She doesn't know what's going on.
But some of that may be, you know,
they sedated her.
Right. Sometimes there's some brain swelling after a big stroke, and sometimes that's that. And some it can you start asking questions that are of a philosophical nature that are almost impossible to address.
Real, just simple. Is she going to recognize us? That's it.
Probably intermittently.
Okay.
But not the way you not the way you're used to.
I'm sorry, you have to listen to this.
And Bob, not
no,
the,
it's okay.
She look at the look on her face.
And Bob, not like, the way you're used to people recognizing you. It'll be. It's not a normal brain anymore. It's not. Her, it's an injured brain, and people, you know, it's broken. There's parts of it that just don't work. And I used to encourage people to think of it like Swiss cheese. There's areas where it's just as a big hole. It's just not happening. Like if she had it sounds like she might have a left-sided hemiplegia, which is a right-sided stroke. So it's, you know, it's not affecting her speech, but it's going to affect her even awareness of the left side of everything. It's this weird thing called anosognosia. Yeah, where you don't see the left side of anything, even clocks and stuff. You just ignore it. And you're not aware you don't see it. It
must be terrifying.
No, they're not aware of it. They don't
so
care.
There's no reason to be terrified.
Yeah, that's the end
sounds
result.
Terrifying.
My sister just called me on
there's
no
a lot
more.
Of difference.
But the end result was, day before yesterday, I just said, it's better that she not come out of it, because now she's going to be in a nursing home. Now she gets paralyzed, can't walk.
Yeah.
Can't, like, isn't it better that she just, because she wanted a cigarette, yeah. My sister's so against cigarettes. And I was like, give her a cigarette.
Wow,
like, you know what I mean?
If yes, like, yeah, you got to get a little philosophical at this point. I mean, what is the goal?
Would you give her a cigarette?
Probably.
Yeah,
if I had one to give her, and she, I was, you know, right there, and was, you know, confident she wasn't going to burn herself or anything else down.
Those are important considerations.
Yes, they are.
Yeah.
But I mean, it does become philosophical. I have a lot of friends who have gone through similar type situations
with their parents.
With parents, yeah.
So here's the thing: you had a sudden
that's
dramatic.
That's what Bob wanted to talk
that's
about.
Yeah. That's the thing. My mom has made no plans. She doesn't plan on dying or being sick.
It's
or,
not going to be her problem. that's the thing. It's really not.
Maybe that's the bottom line of all this.
It really,
Drew's
it really
dad
isn't.
Didn't make any plans. Nate's dad has made no plans. They don't.
I
plan.
Have a friend, and I won't mention her by name just because I haven't checked with her to do this, but it's somebody we all know in common who recently lost a parent. Mm. And this friend of mine has a very good sense of humor, and a couple of weeks after her parent had passed away, she called me on her way to work, and she said, "Well, I guess it's take your mom to work day." And I went, "What do you mean?" And she goes, "Well, I just picked up my mom's ashes, so I guess we're going to work." And I went, "You know, that's the healthiest."
Yes, right.
That is like the healthiest way of like processing and going through. Listen, and I mean, God love her.
Death is a part of life, and when you
but
do,
why don't we talk about it? We just don't talk about
because
it
because it's unpleasant. But to hide it away somewhere is a gigantic mistake. Susan just lost her dad. I mean, it just happened, and she's got a.
You did not hide it away.
Tuesday, so
you
I'm
did not
take him
hide
work.
It away.
She's taking him to work next
well,
week.
Well, actually, I'm going to put him in the safe because he wants to be buried in Cleveland, and I can't
Cleveland.
Get to Cleveland anytime.
This is where his dad is.
It's been pretty busy in Cleveland.
Oh, you should have brought it to the convention. That would have been awesome.
He would have loved it. Oh my God,
he's a big Trump fan.
I could have sprinkled some dust towards Trump. It would have been for him to have known that would have been the best thing ever happened to him.
sprinkled little. His ashes over Trump.
Yeah. Oh, be awesome. Dennis would have been. This is like his. Oh.
And I actually made fun of it with the real estate agent. He usually, after you sell a house, like the agent likes to give you a gift. He goes, "I want to give you." I said, "Listen, you'll finally get to meet my dad. I'm going to have him in the car." So
nice.
Awesome.
It's just the way
it
is.
But he didn't really plan either, and he left Susan holding a
No, we planned. Actually, we got him to plan at age 90. So
she coerced him into at least sitting up a living will, living trust.
Well, I'm talking about we don't even have a thing that we could pull the plug. We don't even have nothing written
for your
down.
Mom.
Power of attorney.
That's bad. It's called a living will or you know, directive to physician.
People don't want to think about that stuff.
I know. Well, we've done a pretty good job these days of attaching that material.
I've had one since the late 80s when I thought I might die any day.
Same here. We're going.
Maybe drug addicts are just so close to death we're kind of thinking
we're on
like
it.
Well, I think drug addicts are attached to death in an interesting way. They really aren't bothered that much by it. They sort of, right? They sort of turned
it's
on
not
by
real.
It.
It's real.
You know
real
what? I'm dead into it. The truth is that I've had it be part of my existence for so long that...
Just whatever.
It's exactly. It just becomes kind of part of who you are in a kind of sick way. But it's really the truth.
My dad talked about death. My grandpa dad, who raised me, he said he remembered as a kid when somebody died, they just put him on the dining room table.
Yes, that was in...
That was fucking...
No, he must have been in the East. Was it the East?
Minnesota.
They'd put him... My mother talked about that.
Dead people in the...
No, they put up two planks and put him up on the...
I'm a Jew. We put you in the ground within a day. We're done with you.
Yeah, those planks, we turn into a pine box and we throw them away. Put them in the ground. Provided there's no tattoos.
So at seven...
Then God forbid.
Yeah, God forbid.
My mother had a tattoo.
Did she...
She did.
Butterfly?
She did, on her butt.
Oh my God.
Could they cut it out or anything? Was there anything to be done?
No, but I have there's a great photograph of it. She did a nude insert on the on Cheetah magazine. It was a very short-lived
rock and roll.
Cheetah magazine. Naked in the Daisies, you know, rear end up with the tattoo and all its glory right there. Yeah, she was like empowerment.
Yeah.
Well, that they should resurrect that, cuz that's a big movement now. I mean, she could really be a you know, she could continue to have an influence, because that's always what she's been, right?
That's what I think. I'm trying to do that.
See, it's hard for me. I don't know how the public perceives your mom, but I know how I heard about your mom's kindness my whole life. You know what I mean? And I don't know, how do people approach you? What do they talk about? Do they know how kind she was and how helpful
what I'm
to
say
so
is
many
this.
People?
Your mother was not the only person to live in my mother's house over the years. Quite a few dozens? Quite a few. And some of them were, you know, provided more than one service. For instance, my nanny at one point was also bringing supplies in, if you know what I mean.
Well, I'm wondering if my mom didn't maybe take care of me a little bit.
Well, maybe that's why she hung around her, you know.
Was not into drugs then.
Oh, then.
She was dating Stephen Stills.
Oh, God, well, that's almost as good. I'm sorry, that wasn't nice.
Stills.
No, well, that would explain it, because, you know, he was a really good friend of hers, and you know, CSN was allegedly born in my mother's swimming pool.
CSN?
Mm-hmm. Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Oh.
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
See, if you say psychedelic first, he knows what you're talking about.
I know the 70s bands too, but in the 60s band, I don't know all the lingo.
Yeah, no,
but
Crosby, Stills, and Nash.
Drew is stuck in the 80s, you know that. He loves 80s music.
I'm not stuck, you know?
A little bit. I mean, it's strange you would say that. We were at a event last night. I don't think of myself that way, but we were at a place where there was a cover band that did just 80s songs, and they just one after the other, and I thought, God, this was very upbeat music.
It really was happy music.
It was happy music, and I thought the fact that people were responding to this again, I think, is a good thing.
Yeah.
I think it's happy music, and let's get that going again. It's fine with me. Not that I'm stuck. No?
I think music is
very generational.
Yeah, for sure.
And what is your shtick is usually what your generation was into. So
you're right. You know. That's 100%.
Mine was Led Zeppelin, Foghat, Aerosmith. That's my generation.
Is that
your generation too?
Although, to be fair, I think the younger generation now, they don't have rock and roll doesn't really exist to them. So to them, it's all sort of music history, and they pick what they like. You know what I mean?
They do, but there's also so much of the older music that's reused in the context of, you know,
sure,
being the hook line on a famous rap song.
But maybe that's why they attach to it.
How many times has Mamas and Pops been used in a hip hop song? A lot.
A couple of times. Yeah, definitely.
No, what's his name? Tupac used it.
Yeah, he did. I think he might
did you know
be
that?
The only...
Tupac sampled Mamas and Papas.
Tupac story, isn't it? You know, he was found by Shock G of
of Underground Digital Underground.
Yeah, and also knows Humpty Hump. I've got his glasses downstairs with the
Humpty?
Nose. Humpty's
oh, really?
Nose and glasses downstairs in a case. Yeah. Yeah, I'll show it to you. No, he's a genius.
Well,
a genius.
Well, you just proved the point of the whole 90s thing. Right
terrible there. Alcoholic. Just... Terrible alcoholic. You know, terrible. But oh, the guy, really? If you ever met him, he's wow. a very interesting guy.
Wow.
And he says he found Tupac, and I think that's true, and he's not prone to hyperbole or anything. And it's just interesting to me that this all kind of, they're all kind of.
Well, Tupac's mother was in the Black Panthers. There's a things that came after were were each generation keeps affecting the next generation.
Oh yeah,
and never more directly than Anthony Kiedis' dad was our coke dealer in Hollywood.
Our meaning the Iran. Yeah,
everybody.
Okay.
He said "our," but I was unclear who he was referring to.
Did you mean the children?
I have nothing to do with it. I wasn't even born yet.
But let me. But
there's a generational thing of one generation profoundly affecting the next.
There's a ton of material here to mine. You know, we started by talking about, you know, this generation that you're contending with right now, meaning your moms,
mm-hmm.
that has not planned for their aging and demise. Both surprises to them that they got old, shocked, and B, that they would ever die. And so they're not really planning, they're not really understanding, they're not really paying attention to it. And it burdens the generation behind it. And so like Susan and I, we got our will together when we were like 34, and like we got to redo it and get it updated and make sure it's, because, you know, we're learning some of the details now going through it with our parents. It's like, we don't want to do that to our kids, you know.
But I think it's as simple as somebody saying to you, I remember making my will and saying, I don't want any extreme things or whatever.
Yeah.
And it was because my manager in music said, you know, you can't, you got to have the way you're living, you need to have a will,
Bob,
and a plan.
But Bob, you need to have a plan for your kids. You need to make everything explicit so they're not burdened with anything.
No, but I'm saying all it takes is somebody suggesting it. They're not being suggested. My mom's friends were not suggesting she like figure
Trust
out
me,
what she's going
to
do.
As a physician, you suggest it to every patient all the time. Trust me.
Oh,
because
we
are obliged.
We're not allowed to
it's
go in.
It's making me
there.
Nervous because I haven't done one recently. But
it's hard to get to it. You know
yeah.
what I mean? It's hard to get to. I understand that. But to just not have done it and not be willing to when your kids or
right.
your doctor brings it up, that
right.
to me is bewildering. And by the way, wow. there are things now you put in your refrigerator. There's a form that's really quite good that is explicit to the paramedics and everything on what you do if something goes bad. What's up, Susan?
Apparently, you can just write a letter and sign it and put it somewhere safe.
I did that. I like 20 years ago, I did it.
My
and
kids
gave it
need
to
a
my
will.
Attorney at
like,
that point.
My kids have, you yeah. know, their college funds or yeah. whatever. I said, you guys need to write a will because what happens? You know,
mm-hmm.
where's it going to go?
Mm-hmm.
And it has to be planned out.
Yep. You're a good, great point. I mean, think about that. See it gets involved. And our parents and your mom has left you guys not knowing what to do, not knowing what her wishes would be. And when they're in an altered state, it's hard to tell what to do. And so you have no alternative but to push forward. And you have to push forward kind of aggressively. You're required by the law.
And you have to make decisions you don't want to make. Okay. Here's one. She was in this nursing home for about a month because she broke her shoulder.
Yeah.
The one that's near my sister's house. And she talked about that place as a death trap. It's a hellhole. That's the one my sister and I decided, well, it's close to your house. It's convenient. And I thought if she is going to wake up out of this or realize something, waking up in the hellhole might bring reality back.
You want to punish her? So
no, I want her to wake up to reality.
Oh,
she's not recognizing anybody.
Yeah.
If she realizes
it's
she's
not,
in there.
Not going to happen in the way you... It's not waking up. Like, see, this is what drives me crazy. Like Bobby Christina Brown, who they were like, oh, she'll be fine. No. That's dead. That's a dead person. And all the allowing people to keep these people alive and to keep doing things to them is just ridiculous. People,
well,
doctors
the medical
need to,
profession
false,
does
I know.
That.
We need to be very direct. Like, here is how it's going to go. She's... And I've not seen her yet. I don't know the details,
yeah.
but I can pretty much predict she's going to remain hemiplegic. She's going to remain confused. She's going to get increasingly depressed. She's going to be sort of lethargic and out of it. The depression's not going to be the kind of depression you're used to. It's going to be just sort of a energy.
Non-talking.
Just not engaged.
Becomes quality of life issue.
It's all quality of life. I don't want to live like that.
Yeah.
But you have to push on because she didn't make it explicit. You have to get the feeding tubes when she can't swallow. You have to treat
the
pneumonias when they occur.
They tried to do the feeding tube, the deep one, and it wouldn't go in because of something else that went wrong.
Okay.
So she has only the one.
The nasogastric tube?
I guess.
Ugh. So they may have to still do a surgery to put the feeding tube in.
Yeah, the one that goes in. Yeah. So this is not to be depressing. I already been dealing with this for 2 weeks, but even the prior year, she's been allowing herself to just, you know, the best example I give. So I hear she's eating horrible and she's gained a lot of weight. So I said, listen, Nancy, I never really called her mom, but I refer to her as mom. I said, listen, Nancy, there's this thing called Amazon that brings food to you. I'm going to pay for it. And it's good, healthy food. And you just put it in your freezer and you can microwave it and it's good food. And so I ordered it. It was very expensive. And she's doing it for about 2 months, and my sister calls me. She goes, you know, she's not eating that food. She's telling me how great it is. She's just giving it to the neighbors and ordering, like, double pizzas.
Oh, my God. Sounds like my dad.
Yeah.
My dad ate Jack in the Box every day. And we were in the hospital, and they're like, you have to limit your salt because it's going to kill it. Because he was eating it every day, and I didn't know, but I looked at his credit card bill, and it was like every day, Jack in the Box, Jack in the Box, Jack in the Box.
Hey, he lived to 93 or 90 whatever.
And he was a happy guy, right?
Yeah. But it was just funny.
No argument with that. You have to get philosophical with all these things.
All right, so how do we get philosophical?
Because
about
this weird narcissistic bullshit about we're going to live forever.
Have the cigarette and the Jack in the Box at the end of the story.
What is it to be a good son?
Yeah.
I mean, she and I got better at communicating, said no politics, no religion. And that's been working well for years and years, right? We don't talk about politics, we don't talk about religion.
Okay.
Right? Because we're opposites. So, but her health that she wasn't taking care of, and then I think I told you,
best you can.
She was taking Loratabs like crazy and then doubling up on prescriptions and accusing the maid of stealing her Loratabs and wanted you to write a prescription for
Jesus
them.
Christ.
Oh, yeah, that's what's been going on the last 6 months,
Fantastic.
8 months. And so.
How old is she?
She's 70. She's not that old.
Not that old, and it's a shame, but she lived her life the way she wanted to live it. Again, getting philosophical.
I would say for 60 years, she lived it the way she wanted to live it.
I understand. And now she's got some problems that the doctors were contributing to, and now that's over. And now she's a sort of a, not herself, but she's still alive, and there may be some quality in there somewhere. So one thing I would do is look at maybe mom and pop nursing homes or sort of little ones around.
Yeah, that's this one that's near my sister's.
How many beds?
35.
No, you
want to
look for them for like four beds or
those
five
are
beds.
Four or five beds.
Yeah, they have little houses. Yeah, people do that. They're not nursing homes. They're sort of.
Do you know about this stuff?
Yeah, they have like, you know, three or four bedrooms.
Yeah, and they just have people that dedicate their lives to taking care of these people.
I never heard of that.
Yeah, yeah.
And what's it called then?
They're
independent.
Yeah, independent homes.
They're not paying for optimization on the internet, I can tell you that.
It's elder care. Yeah. I don't know how.
Yeah, you just want to look for those. And the nurses kind of know about it. The VNAs knows about it. You can ask the visiting nurses, the social workers. You have to ask questions.
So it's not called a mom and pop. Where is a small home
go? Yeah, small homes for care. And usually they're quite good, and they kind of have a quality about them. It's sort of a homey thing. And she'll just hopefully not move from there. You want to set it up so the paramedics don't get her and nobody gets her if something bad happens. It just happens. Now you got to find a home that tolerates that. A lot of places won't be philosophical. They're too afraid of the legal liability, because if there's any division in the family on how to approach care, they absorb that liability. We're getting a little heady here, aren't we, Susan? You
mm-hmm.
Okay, Susan's getting bored.
Well, I just lived through it. And then you have the estate. Then who's going to deal with the estate? And it's just never ending.
And my mother's estate was open for 17 years.
I'm surprised you're not still.
Did she
you
have
must
a
still
will?
Be dealing
she
with it.
She probably didn't have a will, right?
Well, that's an interesting question. Such great to segue right into that. She died, and they couldn't find a will. They couldn't find a will.
Well, she was so young, it's not surprising, right?
Now they found the will about 4 years ago.
Oh, you're kidding.
What?
Great.
Where was it? How weird.
It was filed under her legal name.
Oh, how interesting.
Wow.
In like the back of a, I don't know. I don't know where it was. All I know is it reappeared.
Oh. God in heaven.
Are you mad at your mom, Bob? For not taking care of herself.
Yeah, the last few years. She survives Hodgkin's lymphoma, gets in great shape, comes out here, visits. It's like
I remember that.
Bucket,
she came to Los Angeles,
she came to
Los
Angeles, bucket list. Yeah. She flew in a jet fighter pilot plane upside down, all this stuff. And then once she beat that, it just was, I said, why don't you come out to California, move back to California? She's like, no, I need to be around her grandkids there. I said, you got grandkids here? She's like, no, I'm going to stay there. Right. And then it's a weird choice he made.
Yeah, it's living life the way she wanted to live it. That's okay.
It didn't end up the way she wanted to live it. That's the problem.
That's denial, and that's a problem, and maybe we need to educate people better about the real consequences. But even then, people will not believe it. They don't really feel mortal, and they don't really believe what's going to happen medically to them. They really don't. And even when they know it, even physicians do this, you know, they just, this denial is a powerful, powerful thing.
Yeah.
And it's not good. You got to try not to
succumb to it. Well, we also, she used to do the thing, I'm only 68. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. I'd be like, yeah, but you got to stay fit and stay going and take walks and go do things and, you know, and eat right and all this kind of stuff. I don't know. It's a hard, hard thing that's going on to millions of Americans, not just us.
Yep, absolutely. Oh, it's the thing. Oh, yeah. The elder care is the thing right now for our generation particularly. Mm-hmm. We've got tons of good emails here at drdrew.com. I'll read one to you that you guys will like. It's a third-year medical resident. Oh, no, third student. Third-year student. So that's why they're asking this question. On internal medicine resident rotation. Question about interacting with patients with a history of addiction. How do you approach a new patient who has a history of drug abuse disorder that is reluctant to relay information about drug use? I'm laughing already. Is there something unique you do to make the patient feel comfortable at sharing information and making the interaction feel a safe space? Well, first of all, don't handle that patient with kid gloves like you're already doing. Just be very matter of fact, I would say. And I would say use humor. Like, dude, you came in with cocaine in your blood, and you were known drug. Come on. What's going on? What's really going on here? Right?
You know, the doctors that I know, nowadays they're just telling addicts right away, like, I don't prescribe to addicts.
Well, that's
a good breaking point to say whether they're there to manipulate you for drugs or they're there for real reasons. And if they're calm and they're like, no, I'm just here for this reason or I need a GP or whatever, then you'll know, like, this is a person in recovery. This is a person
This is a drug addict who's unwilling to talk about their history, though. And so the question is, how do you get a history out of somebody who's lying and bullshitting, right? That's the question they're asking. And you use humor, I think. You just go, come on. What are you talking about?
What do they want?
Well, interesting. Well, so you would say start with make it clear you don't prescribe opiates, you don't prescribe benzos, so let's...
Doctors should understand addict mentalities. Addicts don't like waiting in line. They don't like making appointments. They don't like any kind of shit like that. That's why they drive with no suspended driver's license, because you got to go to the DMV.
That's why narcissism is such a heavy ingredient, right?
Yeah. So if they're there either because they're sick or because they want drugs.
Right.
They're not there for ambiguous reasons.
No, that's right. And let's assume this is
they're not there for attention. They can get attention elsewhere.
No, this is a medical student. You got to assume they came in with sick. And they're not, and so they're not providing their drug history is what this student is asking. How do I get the drug accurate history out of this guy who's here with pneumonia or a broken arm or something? He's a known drug addict. Here's his history, and we see where he's been in here for heroin and blah 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 blah. But he's saying he's not using, and it doesn't seem right because we see cocaine in his drug screen. So how do I get him to say that?
Well,
matter of fact, kid gloves. There's people are so afraid of triggering righteous indignation from addicts. It's weird. It's weird to me. And even if you do trigger it, just go, dude, I'm your doctor. I didn't care.
Well, that gets back to that comedian's thing about worrying about other people's feelings, whether it's addicts or not. That Jim Jefferies guy, it's genius. Have you seen it?
Well, no. Jim is a very good friend of mine.
It's a genius where he goes, oh, I hurt your feelings? Fuck you. Who cares? You know what I mean?
America's, get over it.
America's so worried about hurting other people's feelings.
We're all very
feelings.
Concerned about it. Yeah.
Trust me, Jim's got his own codependency. Trust me. That's his comedy. But yes, I agree.
But that is now that doctor's thing. Like, I don't want to rile him.
How do I get the information I need without actually getting the information that I need?
But to me, it's all symptomatic of how we're all precious. My feelings are precious, so I can't trigger righteous indignation. This guy's precious. That's really the problem, though.
Isn't it the problem. All of society, it's like we need to stop tiptoeing around.
Yes, the preciousness is just like, oh, stop it for everybody. Come on, let's get going here. Believe me, I was just in China. Guess what? They don't give a fuck. Get out of my way. I'm busy. That's their note. I'm busy. Stop. Step.
You're in my way. Move it.
Yeah, you're precious. Good. Goodbye. Moving on. That's their whole thing. Listen, I was in the, there's something called the, like the River Delta, what, I forget the name of the River Delta around Hong Kong. And I was watching the sort of tourist channel at the hotel bed, and they go, oh, there's all these new cities have sprung up around the River Delta around Hong Kong. And I looked it up online today, and like, well, how many people in those different cities? And they're brand new cities, and they're growing. 120 million people just grew up around this River Delta. 120 million people who are all living in these gigantic infrastructure, these huge, huge condos that are like 60 stories high and an acre across, all saying the same thing: get the fuck out of my way, I'm busy. That's all they care about. And so, you know, listen, everybody, we need to like just get on with our business. Just get on.
I was just trying to figure that out. I was just trying to think, why do are we so
precious?
We're careful about what we say, and I think it's because we there's so much information out there, right? There's so much information about what we do and how it manifests in every way possible that we're afraid. That, you know, there's just so much out there
you get reactions.
Oh my God, I'm going to do that and that, then this and this is going to happen.
Yeah,
and,
you're right.
You know, it's like PTSD. Yes. People go, oh God, no.
Yes, some some of it is what comes back at you.
It's mostly focused on child rearing. Let's face it.
Oh yeah.
So, what do you mean?
So
please.
So there's this preciousness about you can't say the wrong thing because people will disagree with you. So Elvis is into Pokemon Go. I don't know if you know it.
I told him,
I'm not into that. Do it in your room. I don't care.
He can't do it in his room.
You have to move around. That's the whole point. But people are saying that's a good thing. It's getting people out and getting people bumping into each other. Even if they're looking at their phones, they're
getting out. How I see it is you have helicopter parents driving their kids all over Los Angeles trying to find Pokemon.
But see, your son is how old?
5.
Okay, mine's 14. Six. It's a totally different story.
He can go on his own.
He's like going on walks up and down Ventura Boulevard with a girl from school. Go.
But see, with a girl from school, though. And the walking. You know, I mean, this
and it's
is
a
not,
social thing because they have no other social interaction at all.
See, it's better than sitting online and just doing whatever.
My son goes, Michelle Obama wanted to get us all moving. Look, Pokemon Go got us going.
he's right.
I know.
He's right.
I know. Yeah. Noah Kugel for president.
But what I'm talking about is this preciousness towards children.
Yes.
Right?
Well, listen.
My dad never played Pokemon Go with me or anything.
Yeah, but
once a month, maybe, he would say, come on, Bobby, let's go shoot some baskets. But and we go in the backyard.
Listen, this is sort of a compensation for the fact that that generation, meaning your dad's generation, treated kids as kind of just above pet. A lot of them, really. They just kind of took care of themselves. We put the food down and we sent them off to school.
You watered him.
Yeah. And really, that was it. And it was sort of a weird post-World War II thing, I think, that did that.
Yeah.
And there's simply all the
I liked it. I had my room. I had my thing.
But now the new generation, right? So with your
son
now.
But I'm telling you, these kids have anxiety because of the hovering parents, Drew.
Absolutely. I agree. That's
for sure.
Because they need to be able to fall down. They need to break their nose. They need to make their mistakes. And these helicopter parents need to lay the F off. They really do.
And I believe it causes anxiety because the kids are going to be 14, 16, 18. The parents aren't there to tell them which way to turn, which way to go.
Right.
That causes anxiety. Like, my entire life, somebody's been over my left shoulder or over my right shoulder to tell me what to do. And now there's nobody there.
Well, as a parent of a child who suffers from anxiety,
It can be from different sources.
But it's my generation, really, because my daughter's 17, and I mean, I certainly was assaulted with all kinds of, parenting advice when I had her, and you weren't allowed to do this, and you weren't allowed to do that, and don't say this to them, and don't tell them no, and don't, God forbid you actually... You might spank them. Don't do that. Mm-hmm. And I will say, this was a moment for me. I was putting both my kids in the car. I think my daughter was in fourth grade. My son was a baby, still he was preschool or whatever. So I'm getting everyone in the car. And my daughter will not get in the car. And she's yelling at me, screaming at me, wisecracking at me. No, I won't. I mean, the whole deal. And after about 10 minutes of it, I lost it. I did. And I slapped her across the face and I regretted it, immediately and felt like a horrible parent immediately and the whole thing. And we were just like shaking on the way up to school. And I got, and she was very upset, obviously. And she got out of the car and told her teacher that I hit her. And I was called to the office with my husband and told that I needed to get into some parenting classes.
Oh, boy.
And if that I didn't, they were going to have no choice but to report.
Did you do the parenting classes?
No, I didn't go to parenting classes, but I did go into therapy myself, because I felt like, wow, this was a moment where I shouldn't have lost it, and it frightened me, because I was raised, when my mom died, I was raised by her sister, who had a bit of a
physicality.
She just was a rager, you know, a yeller and a rager, and I probably shouldn't say that, but
yell you into shape.
Yeah, and I found myself going that way, and I thought, oh my gosh, I really don't.
My mom yelled so much. Oh what? My god, yelling and screaming.
Your mom?
Oh Jesus, like out of control. Like really, like I've only heard it once, that level of screaming, and that was in the locked unit at Los Angeles. The kind of screaming, that kind of screaming.
So you both. So here,
and you do get PTSD from it. You just kind of go,
oh yeah.
I have a I have a 29-year-old, and he and I had it out one time. Same thing. He was about 13. He said, "F you. I don't care what you think." Somehow, that profoundly affected me emotionally.
It was the last straw.
And I grabbed him and I put him down on the bed and I said, "You care now?" And then he, you know, I could see this fear in his eyes, and I let him up, and I just walked downstairs. And he came downstairs and goes, "I could call the police right now, and you'd go to jail." And I was like, this is the world we live in.
The entitled child.
You know what I'm saying?
Yeah.
A 13-year-old would put their parent in jail.
It's a double edge. I like that, on one hand, for the kids that are really being abused. For the kids
Do it, though, do they?
Well, that's interesting. The ones that are really being abused don't. Isn't that interesting?
My daughter threatened that once, and we were in the car when she threatened it, and she was flipping out, and she opened her car door on the freeway, and I went,
Oh, this is not good.
And my husband's screaming at her, and they're screaming, and I went, I'm going to just drive to a police station right now, and I'm done. And they came out, and they explained to her that she had no right.
Wow, great.
To be behaving the way she was. She still didn't believe them.
See,
they could get sued for that.
You don't like the police, Bob? There you go.
Hey, but it got me off the highway.
All right, you guys, we got to wrap this up. This has been a very interesting podcast, very different, Owen, than we normally get into, which is good. I like that.
Fun.
We like doing it. It's about this life, and so we like getting into different stuff, and you've inspired us into weird stuff. Weird for this podcast thus far, but also your mom's thing inspired it too, and I'm sure we'll keep talking about that a little bit, because that's not going away.
It's not going away.
And so if anyone has any issues about parenting, we'd love to hear about that at drdrew.com or at thislifepodcast.com.
Every parent loses it.
Yeah, of course.
One time
no
or
one's
another.
Perfect. Of course no one's perfect.
Why are we held to a perfect standard?
But you can get to Bob on Twitter at AskBobForrest, at AskBobForrest. And also don't forget at First Lady of Love, Susan Pinsky, she is our engineer, Nate. Let's see. You can check Susan's Twitter out at This Life Podcast. You can email. You're right there. You give the email posts. Come on now.
Speak.
Yeah.
Okay. So
I'm no good at this.
Well, we read the questions from drdrew.com/contact. So this is where we're getting our callers or our
emails.
Tell us if you want to be on the show. A lot of people send us emails, but they don't want to be on the show. So,
that's right.
But, you know, we like to read the good ones. And you can always tweet me at This Life Podcast and let us know that you have sent an email and you're interested in asking questions. We don't have a telephone line yet. We've been working on it, but AT&T is a real pain in the neck.
And support the people who support this podcast. And also a reminder for Owen, the Rob Saul Show. You can check it out 10 p.m. Eastern, 7 Pacific. Get it at iTunes. Also in Chicago. Do we know the station yet?
You know, I don't. But
did you say it was an urban station or was it a soul station?
I'm really not entirely sure. But it's Rob Saul.
Go. What did I say?
I think you said Brob.
Oh, okay.
But I don't think they'll find him.
I have terrible.
And I'm on Twitter too.
Good.
I'm Owen Elliott 1967.
Cool.
Owen which Elliott. Is a great year.
That's right up at the top. I missed that one. We have a Facebook page now.
Oh, good.
What month were you born in?
It's getting busy.
I was born 6 weeks before Monterey Pop.
Oh, interesting. God.
So if you want to just contact us on the Facebook page.
What's the name of the Facebook?
At This Life Podcast.
That's the Facebook page. Also, again, the PBS pledge drive coming up end of August to commemorate the Moms and the Papas 50th anniversary. And you want to go, if you want to hear Owen's show, it's listen.robsaul, R-O-B-S-A-U-L, robsaul.com. Check it out there. And again, your Twitter handle is?
Owen Elliott, 1967.
Excellent. And
great year.
And we'll see you
next
time.
It was.
Bye-bye.
Waiting for you to come around. I've been finding mountains to climb, but I find I roll down. If you must go away, hey, I hope you know I want you to stay. Stay with me.